Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, I'm pretty excited. This is the first week we are not on the road in what feels like months.
Doesn't it feel wonderful? I mean, we've had home cooking the last couple of days, or at least I have. You probably went out to some fancy restaurant.
I don't know about that.
But I know we've had a lot of fun. We've been to, what, Dallas, Chicago, D.C., Boston. I mean, it's been a whirlwind tour, and I mean, it's a lot of fun, but I'm ready to be home for a few days.
Exactly.
Well, this is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with an attorney with the Wallach Law Firm, Mr. Sandy Wallach. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the president and CEO, the Grand Poobah, where all the shots are called, with Neutrino Media Group. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Scott Rosenblum. How are you, man?
I am doing great. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Scott, don't be afraid of that mic. You got to jump right in here. You're a media guy, so I'm expecting a lot from you. Talk a little bit about Neutrino. What are you guys doing for folks?
Well, we're a next-generation advertising company. We're focusing much more on personalized experiences, whether through digital creatives or branded entertainment or programmatic advertising.
So like real-life experiences or only virtual?
A little of both. Branded entertainment is more about experiential production, large-scale events with integrated brand experiences targeting advertiser taste. Much like what you would see at Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week. That's a very large experiential production.
Or like what they did at the draft where they had the brands kind of interacting with the people that were there in person then, plus you had the draft happening?
Yeah, a lot of that's product placement. But anytime you have brands where consumers are interacting with the brands at the same time, whether it's a ride and drive or a fashion show where the product is integrated within the production, that's all branded experiences right there.
So that you think this is the next generation of advertising that we're getting a little too, there's just so many messages, it's hard to really kind of get the message to the right person unless you take it to that next level where they're actually interacting?
Yeah, I think much more, much tighter focus on, people's likes and dislikes, which is today with the data that's available, it's much easier to do than in the past. Programmatic advertising really allows for a lot of that. It's basically programming advertising targeting consumers based on data of their preferences, locations, past experiences, different types of cookies coming out of there.
Different, like custom shirts. And it follows me around and says, well, hey, you want to buy this mixer, right?
Yeah, the method and the whole reach of this industry right now is going through a huge metamorphosis with the going forward with this, what you see today versus what you'll see in just 2 to 3 years is really going to be between night and day. But even today, it's getting really focused and targeted based on that. Completely different than 10 years ago.
Right. Well, I remember the movie, I forgot the name of it, with Tom Cruise. I think it was a Minority Report, where he's walking into a store and then they knew that he liked blue shirts or something. And they say, welcome back. And
That is definitely
that's in the realm of possibility now, isn't it?
Not just in the realm of possibility. That technology is here. It's just activating it. But in some way, shapes, or form, it's happening already. But through different geolocation and connectivity to different mobile devices and geo-targeting and connecting that in with different types of preferences in these databases that are out there, you can definitely, through indoor mapping, target people as they walk by stores with different things that they've bought in the past. Just depends on what data is being shared.
Now, how do you balance the creepy factor with that, where people aren't getting freaked out, like that they're being followed?
That's the fine line that you have to balance right there.
Right.
And basically, our company focuses much more on premium publishers and brands. So that's one of the things. I mean, there's a fine line in that, and you the invasion of privacy. It's a serious issue today. So you have to be very careful not to cross that line, and be very careful also not to let different companies on your platform that do cross that line. And there are different companies out there that do that. So the technology and brand protections that go behind the technology that
right.
do this.
That's, you know, just as important, right? Those conversations, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something, right?
They are very important. And, you know, we are very diligent in that, because today there are companies out there. Companies have block lists.
Right.
They block companies, but other companies will try and evade that block list by advertising their category, say – well, I don't want to get into any categories, but say one category
right.
that will portend to be another category, and all of a sudden it's there, or malware that's introduced
right.
that phishes, or, you know, the brand protection technology is extremely important to wipe that out.
Now, can you share a little bit about how you go about having these initial conversations with the client? Because I would imagine that the client isn't as educated about this as you are.
Well, we're fortunate, because going back quite a ways, we were working with brands in one way or another, whether it's been magazines, different media companies, brands. So for us, this has just been a maturation of this process in advertising. It's going from – it's like a car. You know, in the beginning, they were Fred Flintstone.
Right.
And now it's Jetson. But along the way, the car – evolved, and this is just an evolving of this industry. So for us, it's making sure that we communicate how we're evolving with it, and then making sure that we stay on the leading edge of what's out there.
Now, is this something that are you saying your client is telling you, hey, we want to do this, and then you're saying, okay, let's make that happen? Or are you coming to them with the ideas of, hey, you should partner with Fashion Week and let's get this whole thing integrated?
Well, on the branded entertainment side, it's basically it's all creative. It's generally there's different buckets of money that's available. Some are for experiential. Most of that money, though, goes into straight out advertising,
mm-hmm.
whether it's print, whether it's media, whether it's digital. In basically for us, anything creative, you're helping somebody create an idea. But in programmatic advertising, it's basically staying ahead of the curve in the technology and making sure that you are able to communicate that properly to the publishers who are selling that inventory space on their sites, in their newspapers, on television, whatever it is.
Well, okay, that's what I didn't communicate this then. I'm trying to get a feel for, when you're suggesting programmatic advertising, how does that initial conversation happen? Is that being driven by the customer telling you, I would like to do this, or are you having to educate them about this?
A little of both. So generally, if you are in the digital space, you are going to really have to be involved in programmatic advertising in some way, shape, or form, because you're going to have to program your buys, which is basically what programmatic advertising is. So there's different types of programmatic advertising. There's direct buys, there's private auctions, or there's RTB.
What's RTB?
It is where you are bidding, actually, in an
bidding.
Auction.
Uh-huh.
It's real-time bidding. And so our technology bids these spaces out, the inventory on these sites, these ad slots. So if you go to a site like CNN or Daily Motion and you see an ad on the site, generally that ad is bid out to thousands of advertisers. And where it's awarded, you buy the ad and sell it, basically, and place it in 300 milliseconds to the person that wins in the auction. So, you know, we're processing trillions of those a year, trillions of bids a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where most of that advertising is happening. And if you have a site, you're going to need to be involved in that, because there's really no other method of displaying the ad.
Right, and that's a great way to monetize, right?
Right, and really the only way. Mm-hmm. You could direct sell the whole thing, but you're still going to have a program way to place the ad.
So now the customer comes to you and says, okay, this is our demographic of who buys our stuff, and then you help them with this process?
It's more, we can tell the demographic by the information being placed in the bid request. That bid request, if you go to a website, mm-hmm. and at, while you when you go, you put in, say, CNN.com.
Right.
While it's loading, your demographics are sent out, and the auction, if it's transparent, which it generally is, they already know what that is. There's no sharing it. They're bidding on the data that's being passed in that bid. So thousands of advertisers will bid, and the winning one, it's awarded to, and their creative is placed on the site.
Is this freaking you out at all, Lee?
It just seems, as, like you said, this is the evolution of how it's done.
The way it is.
Well, I will tell you what's even more interesting is we have a partner, and they just placed the first programmatic ad in the Super Bowl, in this past Super Bowl.
Wow, so the Super Bowl, that's how you buy ads in the Super Bowl now?
Yeah, well, that's...
Oh, that for the is next year?
That is a way. I mean, they're not all going to be programmatic, right. But they just sold the first one.
For next year's Super Bowl?
It's for the next one. And so they're not all. I mean, you're right. Going to have some pre... It's all based on CPMs and right. what you get for the space. But there is now... There is enough data from Nielsen and everybody else to understand what to place, you know, for whether this household or right. it's wow. really moving quickly.
So now it's changed quite a bit since you got into this industry. Right?
Well, I mean, I'm...
Are you calling him old? Well, how did you get started? What did you do first?
You know, I was in the apparel business first, and right. We sort of grew out of that. Our company sort of morphed into a marketing company. We put together different branded entertainment experiences to promote the brands that we manufactured.
Oh, it was like an in-house. You were doing it for your own?
For our own. Right. And then...
You got good at it, and somebody else said, can you do it for me?
Well, when we sold that, we... You know, you have to do something for a living, right?
Every day you got to do something, right?
And you got to pay the bills. So we, you know, took this model and said, you know, this would be a great model. And we went and partnered with a large magazine in New York and started to produce branded entertainment experiences, and then sort of grew. Mm-hmm. Started to work a lot with Google and AOL and started to grow our business. And they sort of pushed us along into evolving into the next step technology. And that's
how it got to where you are now.
And you just sort of grow with it. You see the different things that you face. You know, you face challenges each day, and it's really up to, you know, your management team to make sure you put together solutions that are ahead of the curve for those challenges. And, you know, we've been fortunate. We have a good management team around us, and they've done that, and so it's really put us in a nice position.
Now, do you have any pro tips for the listener that, you know, I understand the placing of the ads has its own challenges, but from the actual content of the ads in order to get the ROI back, you know, what kind of messaging do you recommend or what works best in different environments?
Well, in programmatic, it's a pretty low cost of entry. You know, that most of it is actually going to probably be spent on the creatives that the publisher mm-hmm. designs, but the cost of entry is pretty low for them. I mean, basically, you have to have a small yield team. The smaller the site, the smaller the staff. But to grab your ROI, most of the investment is really spent in developing your marketplace. If your marketplace is developed, the return or the ROI should be pretty good because it's based on the amount of viewers that
right,
you have.
The traffic to the site and the right kind of traffic, right?
That's right. And some of the sites out there, I mean, it would blow your mind. They're doing hundreds of millions of views a mm-hmm. day. You know, we have some sites that, you know, some publisher sites that are, you know, sending us, they're sending us millions and millions an hour. It's crazy. But that's just what's there because right. you're looking at a global reach. If you take a site like YouTube that has, a billion viewers, but those viewers, that's an exponential multiplication as sure. to how many times they're requesting. They'll go to YouTube and there'll be 9 or 10 views per session, or 20. So each of those will generate 3 to 6 ads. That's a lot of requests.
Right, it starts adding up, right?
So you're talking about billions a day
right.
for just some sites.
And that's why this real-time model works really well.
You have to have it. There's no way to even keep up with that type of demand unless you sold everything direct. But the allocation of resources wouldn't be there to fill all the space. And on top of that, you would not know what the limits are. This sort of balances it out. It works exactly like the stock exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Same type of technology.
Now, what's next for you guys?
Well, for us, it's getting better at what we do. We want to continue to evolve. We want to build our digital creative business. It's, you know, these companies today, like ours, we're basically next generation advertising companies.
Right.
And so for us, it's really to become, you know, better at what we do, offer more features and functionality, and to, you know, make sure that we, constantly are not only putting the best technology behind our product, but also to the use of data. Big data is going to become very important,
mm-hmm.
how it's used, how it's parceled out, how it's gathered,
right.
which we just had that discussion.
Sure.
So that's what's really next for us, is venturing into those areas.
Now, you mentioned Google and you mentioned some of these larger media properties, but you didn't mention Facebook. Was that an accident? Is that because Facebook has its own kind of ecosystem?
No, I'll tell you. We actually just started this industry is divided into several different segments.
Mm-hmm.
You have display, you have mobile, you have video. So when you go to display and you just see a banner, that's just called basic display advertising.
Right.
Video are advertisements that, you know, play inside of a video.
Right, like pre-roll, post-roll.
Pre-roll, exactly right. Facebook is really becoming a player in that business. So we just did a partnership with Facebook, and they are their LiveRail division. Is the technology behind our programmatic video division, and it's really great stuff. They're very sharp at what they do. Most of these players that everybody wanted to, when they all said, well, how are these guys ever going to make money? They're not only
making
money,
huh?
but they're doing a great job at it. They're putting together, you know, Google and AOL and all these guys are putting together great customer service teams, great technology teams, and really good offerings in this business. They've all done a fabulous job.
Now, in some of this, like AOL specifically, I was watching an AOL original program that they had advertising around. Is that something that you get involved with as well? Because maybe some of your clients would want to actually create the programming that the ads are built around. Does that ever...
You know,
that seems to me that... It's not that big of a step to go from experiential marketing to creating programming that ads are built around. That's what kind of the Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week is.
You know, we haven't done it as much with AOL on that side of the fence. But I will tell you, they are so good at they have great content. I mean, from the Huffington Post to just the other properties that they have. And we have not started to work specifically. The access to it is there. We have not started to work specifically, but I would say down the line we probably will.
Mm-hmm.
We've enjoyed working with them. They're a great company to work with, and they've done a real good job.
Now, how do you see other enterprises dealing with programmatic advertising? Like, what effect do they have on the other enterprises?
You know, the basic effect that they have is it's allowing a much tighter focus on what your consumer is looking for and a more efficient allocation of resources to acquire that consumer. So in the past, you know, basic rule of thumb, let's just say marketing, you do a budget for a new business, and everybody's been through this. Where you write down, okay, your sales, your cost of goods, and then you get to marketing, and they say, okay, 15 to 20% of sales goes to marketing.
Right.
But you don't really know, but that was the rule of thumb.
Right. Well, they would say, I know half my marketing budget's wasted, I just don't know what half.
Right. And so what happens today is you're able to focus those resources much you know, in a much more focused and tight fashion to acquire that consumer, or to put in front of that consumer the information that most likely will lead to a call of action. Mm-hmm. And then you can the rest of the resources you can either put into the product or developing further marketing channels for, say, another product category. Mm-hmm. So it's becoming a boon for companies, but as we move forward, it's going to really help to tighten how that money is spent and allocate it to other areas that before you wouldn't. So there could be a savings of 5 to 10% of sales on this.
Right. It seems that at one point there was mass medium advertising, and now it's just so, like you said, highly targeted. You can get down to the individual.
You can not only get down to the individual, as we go forward, you'll understand their journey through the internet.
Right. So you can have different messaging at different parts where they are on that journey.
Yes. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a very exciting time in this industry. And if you, for the companies that are out there and really focusing on putting out a quality product and offering, it's really, it's fun to watch. And the interesting thing about it is there's a lot of companies that are competitors in this industry, but they're all pretty friendly. It's a strange thing because they're competitors, but yet they work together because you make it, you know, a lot of companies will get more, a much higher amount than they have the capacity to handle, and then they'll work out something with one of their competitors to fill the rest.
Right.
It's really an interesting, you know, it's a fun time.
Now, for you, do you have a sweet spot on companies that you work with?
You know, we generally work with high volume premium publishers that not really there's it's not really a particular sweet spot. We're across the board from.
But it's all B2C.
It's B2C, all B2C. And, you know, basically for us, it's, look, we're in all the different, we're in consumer entertainment, we're in media, you know, magazines, car companies, health, fitness.
Right.
But generally what we're looking for are premium advertisers premium publishers that are high volume. That is what our sweet spot is. We're pretty good at it, I think.
Okay, where can our listeners go to learn more, have a conversation with you or somebody on your team about this?
Well, our website is neutrinomediagroup.com, and that's neutrinomediagroup.com. And that's if they want to go there, that's where they just go to that site. Our number is on there.
Good.
And hit the extension 102 and ask for Scott.
There you go. It's that simple.
And once you touch Scott once.
That's it. He knows where you are.
He knows where you are.
Forward.
He's like Santa Claus, right? Well, Scott, thanks so much for coming down here and visiting with us, man.
Thank you. That was great.
Well, it was great. It was a little creepy, actually. But I thought, no, I'm kidding. I mean, it's just, it's a new world out there, and it's a more
it's exciting. It's more,
it is exciting.
It's better for everybody because then the customer gets the messaging that they want and are interested in, and then the advertiser has a more efficient way of reaching them.
Okay, so all kidding aside, next Super Bowl. Or at Lee's house, when the Super Bowl is playing, and people that have Lee kind of money in his neighborhood, they're going to get, I don't know, like a Ferrari commercial, and I'm going to get the Chevy commercial over my neighborhood. Is that really possible?
By then, it could be.
Who knows, a year, right?
That's
like 20 years.
But the technology's there.
Yeah, a swimming pool might appear in your living room by then. I mean, you never know, right? But this industry is
stay open-minded about it.
It's, you know, they're forecasting just in the next year or two, you know, $40, $50, $60 billion worth of advertising spent in this way. It's you have to do it. You know, it's just,
right.
It's if you look at Google and they're what a $50, $60, $70 billion company, they're a big advertising company.
Yeah.
So think about where a lot of those dollars are coming from and understand there's a lot of companies like that. It is a huge impact on the way advertising dollars are spent today.
Yep.
All right, I'm in. Hey, listen, how about staying with us while we visit with our next guest?
Great.
All right, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us Attorney at Law with Wallach Law. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Mr. Sandy Wallach. How are you, and what did you learn in that last segment, man? Are you scared, too, or are you excited?
I'm a little creeped. I'm a little creeped, but it makes sense. It's the evolution.
Well, you're a criminal defense lawyer. You want to talk about how you got to there?
Sure. I got to be a criminal defense lawyer because at some point when I was a little kid and stopped wanting to be a superhero or a professional sports athlete, that's what appealed to me. And so I followed my path, and as I went through law school.
So you were always aimed at criminal defense?
Always aimed at criminal defense.
And then you decided to go on your own, or had you worked for a larger firm and then went out on your own?
I worked for a couple small firms, a couple other lawyers, and as a public defender for a couple different companies, different agencies rather, and then have been on my own for over 10 years now.
Now, part of what we're going to talk about is the APS trial. You want to kind of brief our listeners on what happened and why?
What happened was that... there were some allegations of educators cheating, changing test scores that date back to many, many years ago. In the 2009 CRCT is when the allegations really became public. After that, we started a trial of 12 defendants last August. The trial lasted 8 months, 8 long, grueling months. And fortunately, my client was acquitted.
But the trial, I think there was an uproar. I mean, this was something that was trending on Twitter. I mean, and it was an Atlanta-based case, that when they see these teachers being brought in front of the court and then they live through a banking scandal in an economy that was devastated, and not seeing, 12 bankers brought forth, this really resonated with the public, this story.
It's an example of over-criminalization as well as disproportionate sentencing. There was no need for the criminal case to be brought. No need for criminal charges. It was a waste of resources and a huge waste of effort, particularly if the focus is really on helping the kids and helping students.
Right.
And I think the big part of the uproar was that in any other atmosphere, these type of charges and these type of defendants who were convicted, it doesn't warrant sentences of custody, of incarceration.
Right.
It's probation. And so folks quickly let it be known that that's how they felt, and that they didn't believe that these folks were being treated fairly.
And then for your client specifically, what was your secret sauce for getting them off?
There isn't really no secret sauce.
The other 11 didn't have the same results.
It was tireless effort and relentless advocacy on my behalf for her, and she really never should have been there to begin with. She really never should have been charged, and she never should have been brought to trial and made to sit through 8 months. One of the flaws in our criminal justice system is that if somebody gets up and tells a lie and swears under oath. Then unfortunately, you can be wrongly charged and or wrongly convicted, which we see happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this instance, she was put through all this because some folks were willing to tell lies and falsely accuse her. And in the atmosphere that this investigation went on, when the governor's special investigation was appointed and the GBI agents did all their interviews, it was a Salem witch hunt mentality. And all that took was someone to point the finger and say, cheater.
Right.
And that's all they needed to hear, and that person was then therefore branded a cheater.
And then it was that became their problem,
right?
To prove that they weren't
right,
and that's never easy to do.
Was it 8 months? Does it ever just wear you down to be in a trial that long? Do you exercise? What do you do?
Well, I used to before the trial started. eight months of being on trial is unheard of. Most jobs have some sort of time period where it's the worst or most grueling, a tax day for accountants,
right.
Lunch rush for waiters or waitresses, and you have it would be like that times 10 We're used to being on trial for a few days, for a few weeks. You know, a month is considered a very long trial. So to be on trial for 8 months, it took its toll. It took its toll on the clients. It took its toll on the attorneys, obviously on the judge, who's made comments about that as well, and based on his behavior and, you know, what was shown in the media. And there's a ripple effect. I mean, it took its effect on the family and friends of all those as well.
Right. And, I mean, your firm, is it? I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but you're not the largest firm in town, right? So to put that much time, effort, and resources into a trial like that, it from a business standpoint, that can be debilitating, because when you're working on this, you're not doing the other stuff you have to do to grow a business.
Absolutely. We had, and I say we and multiple defense attorneys, raised that with the judge before the trial and begged and pleaded with him for a number of reasons, including the fairness to the defendants, but also for those that very reason, the business sense of it, that if you put us on trial for that many months, and we had no expectation it was going to even be that long. Everybody thought we were talking about three, four months. But if you have us on trial for even 3 or 4 months, that our business shuts down.
Right.
And so you're talking about all of us, you know, having no income during that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very rough. I'm in the process now of literally getting to rebuild my practice.
Right. It's like, because you've been gone for almost a year. So now, is there any tips you would have for somebody that all of a sudden they get contacted by somebody from law enforcement and said that, you know, now I got a problem? Like, what's the...
Yeah, my suggestion, if you're contacted by law enforcement, is there's no cookie-cutter answer of go talk to them, don't go talk to them, is you got to contact a criminal defense lawyer. And whether you wind up hiring one or not, you need to talk with one to weigh the decision of what you need to do. And it's a little bit like insurance. You don't want to have to use it, but you want there just in case. And the decision of whether to ultimately go talk with a police officer if they contact you is based on what the accusation is, what the officer is actually going to be able to do for you if you do go in, and the short-term versus long-term goals. Are you concerned about the short-term and possibly being arrested, or are you concerned about the long-term and possibly being convicted?
Right. Well, I mean, you see, this is the problem, is television.
Yeah. Right.
Television makes it seem, first of all, that things don't take 8 months. They make it seem like they,
like,
you know,
weekend,
in an hour, right? They knock this thing out. But the policeman's always like, look, if you call a lawyer, we think you're guilty. I mean, how many TV shows that happens?
Well, and there's I guess maybe that's life imitating art, but there is that perception. There is that perception that, well, why do you need to contact a lawyer?
And right, if you didn't do anything, why do you have to talk to a lawyer?
I amazingly have had a law enforcement officer pose that to me during an interview and
right.
say, you know, I'm just curious, if your client didn't do anything, why would they need a criminal defense lawyer? And the reason is because you have the right and you have that protection. And while there are some very ethical and very good police officers out there, there are also some who aren't. And there are some who aren't going to deal straight up with you, just like there's, you know, lawyers who aren't and judges who aren't and everything else. So you need somebody there who is advocating for you and is there to protect you. You know,
right.
if the officer takes it down a path that you weren't expecting or aren't comfortable with, or treats you in a way that you're not comfortable with, you're often too intimidated to do anything about it, but
right.
the lawyer's not. And just by having a lawyer present with you, you're going to be treated differently by that officer during that interview than you would otherwise.
Well, I would think that in today's climate with the police, that your job got easier in terms of people being less likely to be that forthcoming with police, that they would want to have some protection.
You know, I think people's natural inclination is to try to talk with them and explain something away. And sometimes it's successful doing that. And sometimes they're just digging themselves a bigger hole, because it really doesn't matter what they say. The officer already has a perception in his head of what's happened, or he's already interviewed other people, and so he's already formed his conclusion. And so all you're doing is helping the officer out by giving him evidence, regardless of what you say.
Right. And that's an important thing, to be judicious with your words, I would imagine, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, that's, you know, if you consult with a criminal defense attorney, you talk through that beforehand, so you understand going in how to answer, what to answer, and you have some parameters as well as some assistance in preparing.
All right, so here's what I want to know. As far as I know, I'm not up for any police conversations in the near future, but let's say, you know, I get home today and that opportunity presents itself. Wouldn't it be better if I already had a guy? I don't have a guy or a lady, so I'm thumbing through the yellow pages. So Is there, would even in the criminal defense side of things, would you have a guy?
Well, you want to know somebody, right? Because you want to be able to quickly pick up your phone and hit speed dial, right, or at least go through your contacts.
Yeah, and say, Linda, meet me downtown, you know, or whatever. Right?
And my wife and I often joke with friends or people that we meet at cocktail parties that you don't want to ever have to use my number, but you want to have it just in case, and that's right. The reason why. And what most folks have to do in that situation is frantically start calling family members or friends or other lawyers who aren't criminal defense lawyers and say, you know, oh my gosh, this is what's happened. You know, right. I just got a call from a police officer, or my son just called and he got arrested, or, you know, whatever the circumstances, what do I do?
Okay, so you don't necessarily have to have someone on retainer, but it'd be good if you had a card of someone that you trusted and would take your call.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And that's Wallach Law.
Got it.
So now, but is it a good idea, or are you open to this, or is this unreasonable for them to meet you before anything, just to say, look, I want to have somebody in case something happens? Or does that never happen?
No, I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't think it really happens. I think most people are comfortable if they just they have your name or number, or you've been recommended to them, or they've met you, just to know that if something happens, they can quickly call somebody and at least have somebody there to start working for them.
So that's because I would imagine, like, you're in a crisis at that point.
Right.
And that's not the best time to go shopping.
No, that's what I'm thinking, right? I want to have the person.
Want to have a go-to person.
Right. So we're going to get your card before you leave, right? Because there was that thing a couple... No.
So now, for you as a business owner, we mentioned the hardship that you had to go through for these 8 months. Did you, when you were looking at this career and you were thinking, okay, I'm going to be this criminal defense to help people like your client, and now you've lived through this thing 8 months, that's probably... You didn't even imagine that was possible, right? An 8-month trial. Are you kind of having second thoughts about this, having your own firm, or are the benefits outweighing the kind of the negatives of that? Because you are kind of, now you're kind of vulnerable because you had to invest so much time and energy into this.
I would say that there are times that you enjoy being your own boss more than others. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nice. It's certainly nice to call the shots and not have somebody tell you when to show up and what to wear, right, and, you know, all those kind of things. But you know, the flip side of it is you bear the pressure and the financial responsibility.
Right.
For me, I enjoy doing it, and it's worth it for me. It's worth it because I get to, you know, when my son has or my kids have something at school that I want to go to, or there's something in the afternoon that I can help
can
take them to that activity.
Clear your schedule.
You know, I don't have a boss that I have to go ask, and I can go do right. those things. And if it means that I have to get up early in the morning or work late at night, you know, that's my balance.
And that's your call.
Right. But well, but it's not for everybody.
His person got off. This is a Lifetime movie. This is, right?
Is
you're going to see this on the Hallmark channel.
Maybe it is.
Right?
No is comment.
I haven't been contacted by Lifetime yet.
No comment. But truly, that story is going to be some sort of a movie. I can't believe they're not going to have more opinions about how that shook out.
I think that the opinions still rage, and unfortunately for those who were convicted, it's not over yet. They'll have an appeal process, and that'll go on for several years.
Right.
Wow.
I mean, they cut some of their sentences, right? Didn't the judge?
The judge reduced the sentences he gave to the three higher ups that were tried, the area directors, and reduced those sentences from 20 years to serve 7 years to 10 years to serve 3. So a step in the right direction, but we're still talking about 3 years of incarceration.
Right. No, it's nuts. All right. So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, website?
WallachLaw.com. WallachLaw.
And they shouldn't hesitate to call.
Not at all.
All right, Sandy. We appreciate you coming on and telling your story. It's an important one.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And thank you, Scott, for being part of this.
Thank you.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.